Okay, so we, well, look, everyone, almost everyone in the room here is in my share. So we have spent a lot of time this year talking about Shemitah. So, you know, we can't not, when it's in the Parsha, say something about it. Something that, amazingly, we haven't even said yet this year. So in Perek Chof Gimel, so in the middle of Mishpatim, you get a series of psukim. Right now, I'm going to read from a few psukim before because I want to make a general point about Mishpatim and then zero in on Shemitah. Right, so let's say if you start a pasuk Vav, Lo tate mishpat evyoncha birivo, right? Don't subvert the rights of the poor in their disputes. Midvar sheker terchak. V'nakiv etzadik al taroki, lo atzik rasha, keep far away from falsehood. Right, don't kill the innocent, because I will not acquit the evil one. Don't take bribes, for bribes blind the eyes of the clear-sighted, and twist the words of those who are righteous. And don't oppress the ger, however you define ger, because you know the soul of the ger, for you were gerim, again, whatever gerim means, sojourners in the land of Egypt. And for 6 years you shall plow and gather its produce. Then in the seventh year you shall let it lie fallow. Let the needy eat it, the animals eat it. That's what you should do to your vineyard. That's what you should do to your olive grove. Right, so now you read this whole bit and it's like, wow, right? I just read like, you know, 5, 6 psukim. It's like there's like 20 different mitzvot in there, right? And trying to define them, I mean, broadly speaking, they're probably all bin adam lechavero. Even Shemitah here is fundamentally mostly framed from the bin adam lechavero perspective, right, in terms of poor people eating. We did talk about in Shir, right, the different emphasis in different parshiot. Then you get Shabbat, and even Shabbat here is presented as an opportunity for the animals to rest, and for the slaves to rest, and for the geirim to rest. But then, right, if you would continue, right, you would get, right, uvechol asher amarti alechem tishameru, v'shem elohim achirim lo tazkir lo yisham al picha, but be on guard based on what I've told you, and don't mention the names of other gods. And the names of other gods should not be heard on your lips. Shlosh regalim talchog li b'shana, and you should have the 3 regalim. So the first point I want to make is in general about the legal system in the Torah. You know, we talked about it at the beginning of the year when we talked about Shemitah. The Shemitah is like amazing. It has so many reasons. It synthesizes, depending on which parsha you're reading, bin adam l'chaveiro reasons, right? Economic reasons. It has theological components to it, right? It has... Right, it reminds you about reliance on God and the land belongs to God, and all that is together. But I think that when you just read Mishpatim and just take a macro perspective, what you realize is, well, of course it does, because one of the things that's very hard about reading the Torah when you live in the 21st century is we tend to read it from the perspective of the 21st century, which means that we in our heads have a very clear distinction between economic laws, moral laws, religious laws, right, between justice and what Adam Smith would have called beneficence or benevolence, right, what we consider the bare minimum and what we think goes beyond. But the Torah doesn't, right? The Torah, being a holistic religious system, right, can synthesize all these, and there isn't a fundamental difference, right? Meaning, in these psukim, you have civil law, and you have religious law, right? You have everything from don't twist, right? Don't judge, right? Don't take bribes, to go up to the Beit HaMikdash and bring karbanot. you have things that are basic law, like don't lie, don't judge in court against the law, right? Don't oppress people. To what I think the average person would call not justice, but staka, right? Kindness and benevolence, like Shemitah, right? Which is give up your ownership of the field, right? Or treat the poor, right? Or give them a day off, right? So your animals can rest, right? That's, I mean, it's not by right, right? Not by, I mean, right? Once the Torah says it's by right, but it's not by right, right? Meaning you could hire someone for 7 days with no rest. It's not like you couldn't make a contract like that. It's not dishonest, right? And that's why I tend to think that people, right, we have this trouble because we don't, we read the Torah, and if, right, you were trying to, if you were giving a shiur, right, so I'd organize these differently. Some of these are religious laws, some of them are moral laws, some of them are civil laws. Even within the civil laws, there are those that are basic justice, there are those that are beyond, but the Torah, right, it just doesn't, it doesn't play by those rules because the Torah demands a lot more from us, right, than justice, right? It demands what, in, from a civil perspective, would be, right, I don't know, kindness, right? And but for the Torah, where God is demanding an entire way of life, yes, right, there may be distinctions between these laws, but they're part of a single system. And therefore, Shemitah, right, which is embedded in the middle of this, so here Shemitah is presented as a civil or a moral law, right? I don't know if it's civil or moral or whatever, but, right, allow the poor to eat, the animals to eat, right? In Vayikra, it's presented theologically, right? But that's not a contradiction. Like, it's only a contradiction if you think that these categories are fundamentally distinct. But if you think they're intertwined, the fact that you get one perspective now, one perspective later, isn't a problem, right? Because the system itself is more holistic. The second point I want to make on it is that within that context, Shemitah, as we've talked about, is one of those demanding laws that appears in that unit, right? Where it really reminds you of just how extreme and far-reaching the demands of the Torah are, right? Meaning it's just one of those laws that, having learned it already for 6 months, you're like, wow, this really does drive that point home. But Rav Lichtenstein made a point, which I think is worth noting, which is once you recognize that, it is all the sad, all that much more depressing that modern day Shemitah, right? Shechter gave you the shear. What was the shear? Modern day Shemitah is what mechanism are you going to use to circumvent Shemitah? Right? Are you getting it from Chutzlaretz? You can get it from a non-Jew, or you can do it from a Chira, Otzer Betin, which itself has to rely on a lot of kulot. But, and even if you rely on the whole thing, even if you take off work, right? Even if you say we're going to be Machmir, whatever you think Machmir is, right? Rav Lichtenstein noted it's a tragedy. Well, he called Shemitah, modern Shemitah, halachic tragedy. Because in the time of the Torah, whatever you did, it took over your entire life, right? Whether Shemitah was coming to teach you reliance on God, or was coming to take care of the poor, or teach equality, it took over your life. Nowadays, no matter what you do, no matter what kula you rely on, even if you rely on no kulot and decide, I'm gonna forget it, I'm going to take off work, and so that I don't rely on any kula, and I don't rely on nachri, and I don't rely on any shita, I'm gonna eat nothing but meat and milk. Right, I will have right, and eggs. Right, I will go on some insane keto diet. I will have zero carbs. Right, this year, zero. Right, I will have zero carbs. I will have nothing that grows from the ground. Right, even if you did that, the messages and all the integrated messages of Shemitah would just be lost, because whether you're relying on the, especially if you're relying on one kula or another, and everyone is, and even if you weren't, right, we're not farmers. We don't experience it this way. Right? We just don't. Right? And therefore, right, and there's a value. Once you recognize how much Shemitah is supposed to teach and how much the fact that no matter what we do, we are not experiencing it in that complete and all-consuming way, right? You just have to realize that that may be legitimate, but that doesn't make it less tragic that we've lost something. Right? So he writes, obviously, he says the simple fact that the Shemitah of 5733 constitutes a halachic tragedy. Obviously, the subject of Shemitah is first and foremost a body of halacha covering several areas. But the halachic rules, I'm skipping around a bit, but the halachic rules regarding Shemitah reflect a multitude of values and serve to inculcate them in the body politic of Klal Yisrael. What remains for us today of this enchanting vision? Nothing but a hollow shell. The transition from an agricultural economy to industrial one has taken most of the prohibitions of work off the agenda for nearly everyone. What options are available to the people who are anxious to observe the Kedusha of Shemitah with careful attention to all the details? They can rely on the legal fiction. Right? Woe to the ear that hears that the fields of Eretz Yisrael from Lebanon to Egypt and the Mediterranean and the Jordan have been sold or leased to non-Jews. Right? He says, I'm not questioning the halachic validity. Right? But he says it's the phenomenon itself that we should examine. Right? And if you don't want to rely on the heter. So he says, you could buy from non-Jew, you could buy from Chutz La'aretz, blah, 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 blah. But he says, whatever you do, right? But what has this to do with the biblical rule that you may eat whatever the land produces during the Sabbath? Is there any recognizable connection between this perhaps overweening pride in the feeling of man's subservience and the Creator's supremacy that lies at the heart of the mitzvah of Shemitah and is engendered by performing it? Among those who are punctilious about observing the prohibition of uncultivated produce, how many of them accept and live the Shemitah year in simple joy as opposed to many who are waiting with all but bated breath for it to end? I do not want to give the wrong impression. I'm not criticizing those who rely on the heter, da 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 da. Right, he says? I'm not criticizing the heter. Right? The reality is that there's no practical solution that can quiet our consciences. We take medicine, but without a bracha. We must not be seduced into believing that the bone stuck in our throats is actually candy. Perhaps there's no alternative, but that is precisely the problem. That is the root of the halachic tragedy. Right? And I think recognizing that no matter what we do, Shemitah comes from such a demanding and such a beautiful, all-encompassing vision of integrated religious and moral and just, right, moral law and justice and beyond the, and Shemitah is just one manifestation of it. And nowadays, every share in Shemitah is how do we get around it? Right? And even if it weren't, right, even if we were doing it pshuto kemashmo, we wouldn't feel it. Right? And that, if nothing else, is a tragedy. Right? And that, I think, just to end, is what really forces us religiously to learn about it. Right? Because we're not going to experience it, right, naturally. Right? The only way we have a chance at feeling that broad sweep, right, that vision, that all-encompassing vision, all the lessons, is if we learn about it and actively try to feel that. Because Shemitah itself, in an industrial import society, as wealthy as ours, we're just not going to feel any of it. We're not going to experience it. And that is a tragedy, right? We can learn about it and try to at least learn its lessons, right? But we have to, but if we don't at least acknowledge what we've lost, then we have no chance at deriving any of that benefit, any of that spiritual benefit from it. Okay? So that's a little bit on Shemitah as it appears in Mishpatim, and in general, Shemitah as it's experienced in the modern world.